Hello, this is Brian Reynolds, volunteer with the San Luis Obispo County Library for Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. Today, we are joined by Mary Jacka, community worker, Northern Santa Barbara County, and Corey Arellano, directing attorney for San Luis Obispo County for the California Rural Legal Assistance Association. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope I put the A on there. I hope it's association.
It's Inc. Incorporated.
Inc. Okay, mm-hmm. Great. We're so glad you're here. CRLA, California Rural Legal Assistance, where does it come from? Does it go back 5 years, 50 years?
California Rural Legal Assistance was established in 1966. And it wasn't California Rural Legal Assistance. It was through an economic development program. But it was during the time where Cesar Chavez felt that his, they were doing a lot of worker rights and they needed representation. And, of course, they couldn't afford to pay for attorneys. Some provided pro bono, but it came about because of that need that was out there.
Probably a big need at the time.
Exactly.
Corey, do other states have something similar? Or are we unique?
No, quite a few other states receive similar funding for legal services for the rural poor. So we're not alone in this fight. We're very fortunate to have a relatively big program here in California. And we have 21 offices throughout the state. And this year we'll be celebrating our 60th anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Where does it live in terms of its organization? Is it in the government code? Or, was it passed by an act of the legislature? Is it just a nonprofit?
It's a nonprofit, but we receive primarily federal funds through Legal Services Corporation. So we're primarily federally funded, but we receive a variety of other grants. We're independent. We're not a governmental agency. We are a statewide law firm that receives funding to do a particular kind of work.
Okay. One can assume that people have needed, of all sorts, people of all walks of life have needed legal assistance since the beginning of time. But it's kind of interesting that, at least in California, that perception didn't become real or active until the mid-1960s. And maybe it was, I'm just speculating, but it had to do with a lot of other social movements that were taking place at the time, environmental movement, racial equality, and it was CRLA's time to move forward. You mentioned Cesar Chavez. Are farm workers and farm worker issues, are they a big part of what you do or a small part?
They had been a big part in the past, but as times change. And so we've moved several years past. We've moved into low-wage earners, low-wage workers, hotel maids, car wash employees, et cetera. So we did start off primarily because of the farm worker rights that were needed. But it's evolved along with the economy and what's happening.
Right. This area where we live in the Central Coast, many parts of it are agricultural, and there's a lot of workers and a lot going on, although I suppose most agriculture is becoming somewhat more mechanized. But still, strawberries have to be picked, and beds have to be made, and meals served, and restaurants, and so on and so on. So could you describe the kind of outreach or community work you do, Mary? What is it that you do on a typical day?
On a typical day, I will be out networking with other agencies, talking about what CRLA does and the services that we can provide. Many of them refer their clientele to us because it's the same people, they're poor people. So I'll network with them. I also do some resource tabling, like on weekends, if there's a health fair happening somewhere or some kind of an event where I can set up a table and distribute information about all the services that we can provide and try to provide. Of course, we're limited staff, depending on the staff. But I will go out in the evening attend meetings, give some information if needed, or just a lot of times just monitoring, you know, what's happening. You know, there's education issues. Okay, what's happening? Where's the problem? What's, you know, let's, how can the community fix it? So I do a lot of work with parents that have their children or students in the school system. So typically I'll get a call and say, you know, you need to come here. I've got a problem. I'll take my camera and see what the problem is. It normally would be habitability issues, you know, cockroaches, bugs, you know, and the landlord won't spray. And if they do, they say you have to pay for it, issues like that, then I'm called out there. I investigate, and then we can do a report to the code enforcement so that they can go out there and document also the issues.
So I'm sort of putting it together in my head that when you're doing your outreach in the community, there would be at least two prongs or directions. One would be to reach out to potential clients, and another would be, and agencies that help those clients, another would be to hear from those people and those agencies what's going on and where it's going on. And so it's sort of a two-way communication.
Yes, that's correct. That makes a lot of sense. Thank you for putting it that way. But that's exactly what it is. We also have a committee of members of the community, and they'll come in to once a month. We try and have a meeting, and they'll come in and give us input about what issues are happening in their lives or friends of theirs, and then we'll give education. Primarily, we want to give them the education tools, know their rights, whether it's housing, employment, education, and just across the board, we want to educate them, because if you don't know you have a right, then you're not going to do anything about it. And maybe you're living in substandard housing, for example, or the kids aren't getting an adequate education. Their needs, you know, maybe they need special needs and they're not being given. So, you know, we need to be out there letting them know that, yes, you can. You know, it's more empowerment so that they realize, wait a minute, I have this child that I need help with, and I didn't know there was help out there.
Fascinating. Corey, could you describe the major areas, the priority areas that CRLA works with? Some of them have been already mentioned, but please make that, just tell us that list.
Sure. We have five priority areas. We handle civil rights matters of low-income rural clients in a variety of issues, persons with disabilities and other constitutional protections, rights that pertain to minorities. We also provide, as Mary talked about, education advocacy, students' rights, special education, placement problems, suspensions, and expulsions. We have an area, that we call health and family well-being, which includes unemployment benefits, state disability, CalWORKs, general assistance, CalFresh, you know, social services, benefits needs, and housing matters, as Mary described, substandard housing conditions, landlord-tenant issues, fair housing issues, discrimination in housing, as well as foreclosure rights, tenants in foreclosure and homeowners who are being foreclosed upon, which, of course, as we know, has been a major shift and issue for quite a few years now. So CRLA has was able to secure some funding to provide services for that, and we're very pleased that that's going pretty well.
When an attorney like yourself provides information or advocacy, is it part paperwork and part pleading in court? How does that work?
Well, it's a little bit of everything. CRLA is not your typical law firm. It's a lot of grassroots and get in there and help out. So it could be anything from, you know, answering the multiple phone lines, taking an intake over the phone, giving counsel and advice over the phone if it's something that we can do quickly, meeting with clients, having interviews with clients to see what the issues are, oftentimes clients will come in and they have one problem and it really steamrolls into multiple problems. So it's a lot of issue spotting and drawing out the information from your clients. And because we see so many clients, you know, it gets easier and easier. So there's a lot of multitasking, working with various types of personalities and clientele, and then following through with what it is that the plan is for the client that would best suit them. And if that means, you know, demand letters or filing documents in court or responding in court, we will do that.
I was a public librarian for 40 years, and one of the things that was axiomatic is that most of the time when a person asked a question, it wasn't what they really wanted. Chances are it was in there, but you almost had to tease it out by artful dialogue, and eventually it would be there, but they didn't quite know how to phrase it or connect it with other things that were on their mind. So I'm sure the face-to-face dialogue is really important.
It's very important, because when you have them there and they're feeling more comfortable because they're seeing you and they're seeing that, okay, this person is nodding and understanding what I'm trying to get out, and then it just goes on. And we have a phrase in Spanish that our clients use, our Spanish speakers. We'll be talking to them, and they're trying to, you know, tell us what the problem is, and then they'll listen to us. And then they'll say, I have... Tengo una preguntita, which is a little question, just a minor question, and I have to laugh because it's
probably fasten your seatbelt time.
It is. It's not just a little, you know, 2 minute or 1 minute answer. So, but that's common. They don't realize, and they're so appreciative. I mean, they just apologize for taking your time, and I said, no, it's not. Don't apologize. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, it's. As a fluent Spanish speaker and spending a lot of time with Spanish-speaking people for years, I think you can generalize and say most Latinos are very polite.
Very.
Almost to the point of they might not tell you something that's on their mind or even the truth about the matter because they don't want to offend you or seem flip. What about
exactly.
The language barriers? I know there's this phenomenon sometimes where the parents can't make themselves understood and they speak through, let's say, a youngster, a 12-year-old, which might be fine if you're grocery shopping, but not so much in court or in the hospital. What about those issues?
Yeah, well, we're fortunate to have pretty broad range of bilingual staff. Many of our attorneys are Spanish-speaking, so that makes it pretty easy to go ahead and do an interview and provide good counsel and advice and legal assistance. And our community workers and clerical staff as well tend to be bilingual because of being in rural communities and definitely needing that bilingual component as part of our advocacy. It's essential. We don't utilize family members. It's not appropriate. The terms are too technical, and our clients deserve the same level of services that anybody would get, so they get that in the language that they understand.
I know that when a public library wanted to reach out to, in this case, the Latino population, which for most places in California is the dominant non-Anglo ethnic group, I guess you'd say, you had to think about different approaches. It wasn't necessarily posting something in the library or nearby, but it might be something in the laundromat. It might be talking to the local priest. It might be a community association. You almost have to come up with different techniques. It might be the radio.
Right, right.
Have you found that to be true?
We find that to be very true. I mean, we always try, when I'm going to do a presentation, I always ask my clients, okay, what radio stations do you listen to frequently? Because out in the fields especially, they put the radio on full blast and they're listening to music or trying to if the machinery is not too loud. But so they'll get the messages through there. Also, you know, where should we have this meeting? It's really very important for them to feel comfortable. So sometimes, you know, we have to go to like a church hall or a local community, you know, school, a center. So you have to think outside the box because you can't do the same thing, like you said, post a notice. Okay, it's a good reminder to hand out to people so that they know that this is what's happening at that time and date. But a lot of it has to do is that you have to build a trust with a few people, and then they'll help you, and you ask them to come with you and help you, you know, get a group of people to listen to whatever topic we want to address.
Hopefully you've chosen the right person. Sometimes the loudest person or the person who seems the most authoritative may or may not be.
Exactly.
The person whom other people trust.
That's right.
This is Brian Reynolds, a volunteer with the San Luis Obispo County Library for Issues and Ideas on KCBX, Public Radio for the Central Coast. Today we are joined by Mary Jacka, community worker, and Corey Arellano, directing attorney for the California Rural Legal Assistance Incorporated in San Luis Obispo and northern Santa Barbara County. Is it safe to say that a lot of your clients are perhaps reluctant to push an issue or take a risk because of some of the things they've gone through in their lives?
Yeah, it definitely depends on, you know, we have a variety of offices and different demographics and different clientele that qualify for our services. Certainly, most of our clients historically have been afraid of being blackballed, whether that's with their employer or not being able to find other housing. So they certainly are afraid of coming forward. Whereas, you know, we have changes in the economy, and individuals that may historically not have qualified for our services now do and aren't so reluctant with coming forward. So we are getting a lot more of a variety of clientele and trying to meet all of those needs.
Do you have a sense as to how much, what percentage of the needy clients you're reaching versus how many are out there and do need help? Like 10% or 80%? Do you have a feel for that?
Well, we, as a whole, CRLA serves approximately 40,000 clients a year. And that doesn't include, you know, extended families, a household of 5, 6. So that's quite a few cases, but certainly...
In this area or statewide?
Statewide.
Statewide.
But certainly there is always a need. There's never enough resources. We certainly could answer the phone all day, every day. We'll be there sometimes at 8, 9 o'clock at night conducting an outreach presentation in the office, and the phone will still be ringing. So it definitely could always utilize more resources and more funds to provide adequate legal services for areas that are just essential to an individual's daily life, their housing, their education, their employment. All those things is what makes our community function. And when you have the need to fix one of those things or a problem in one of those areas, it's really detrimental, and it really impacts individuals, their family, and the rest of the community.
And can I piggyback on
sure.
that? A United Way did a study, and you can go on their website and find out this data. But they did a study on, you know, what the poverty in families, you know, trying to have, you know, they have the burden of life, you know, groceries, rent, and that. And an example was given this morning by an instructor or director at Allen Hancock College who said, you know, my students, some of them, after everything is paid, their utilities and rent, they have $400 to live on for the rest of the month. Who does that? Who can do that? But they do it. And, you know, it just amazes me how they can. They're not getting proper nutrition, I'm sure. That's where you cut. When my children were little, I always cut at the grocery bill. That was the only one. I couldn't dictate how much I was going to pay rent, how much I was going to pay the electric company. So the only place I had control is my food money. So I can relate, you know, to that situation. And so it's just that the data that is out there now through United Way is stunning, especially for these areas. And, you know, when the median income in Santa Barbara County, you know, we have Santa Barbara City, which has millionaires, billionaires. And then that brings the median up to like 70,000. Who does that? You know, I mean, some of our low-wage workers earn, you know, 9 to 20 9,000, you know, 9,000 to 20,000. And they have to survive and pay rent. I mean, a two-bedroom is like $1,600 for a two-bedroom, you know. So if your minimum wage, it's just, I just can't fathom that they even survive. Then you throw in a medical emergency. What happens?
We have lived on the Central Coast a little over 20 years, and I've seen companies come and go. And one of the complaints often is, we can't attract good workers because it's too expensive to live here. Well, what about the workers that can't afford to move or have other ties to the community? And as you say, they're very artful in going month to month. Also, I'm not going to ask you to mention it, but I will. And that is, in this country, the United States of America, there seems to be badges of honor if you're wealthy, and badges of disrespect or disdain if you're poor. It's as though if you're wealthy that someone smiled on you and you got it through hard work and diligence and education. But if you're poor, you probably made some mistakes along the line. And it makes me think of middle-class wages, which have been stagnant for 30 years. Anybody in the middle class who was working doesn't control their wages, right?
Right.
That's controlled by somebody else. Fast food workers come to mind, striking for minimum wage and labor actions. What are some of the trends? How would your work be different, say, 20 years ago from today? I know we mentioned earlier in the discussion maybe a little less emphasis on agricultural workers. How does the landscape changing there?
Well, we're seeing a broader demographic of clientele, certainly newly low-income, seniors that perhaps were doing well, working, retirement benefits, got into a reverse mortgage, or, you know, spouse passed away and
got sick.
So we're seeing a new sector of poor that we just historically hadn't seen, and additional demographics would be the LGBT community, issues with indigenous population, especially in our area where our indigenous community are a lot of the farm workers now that historically weren't, was the Barceros and, you know, people coming over doing the work and have been here for quite a while. They've now have a new population of workers. And so, you know, CRLA has adapted and moved and included and is inclusive in the types of services and making sure that we meet that clientele's needs as well.
I'll bet that there's a lot that you wish you could do, but since your jobs are limited to legal issues, if a person can't pay their rent, as we discussed earlier, that's not your job to make that right, unfortunately. Just one of those things.
Yeah.
How much of your business is individually driven versus by groups? And I'm thinking particularly of a legal decision, maybe not a class action suit, but something that might be won or lost, and it would affect a whole group of people. Do you have those come along from time to time?
We do. We really keep an eye out for those types of cases. That is the type of work that provides impact and social change that CRLA is dedicated and doing. You know, we see that is the broader need and the greater need to provide, you know, long-term change. So while we're fortunate to have individual offices, which is paramount in getting clientele to trust us and to let us know what the issues are, we're also fortunate to have the ability and the resources to, when we see an issue and have multiple people come in on the same issue or large groups coming in with that issue, to do impact work, which is bigger litigation that can change, you know, change our communities, change
statewide,
change nationwide. Mm-hmm. So that is the type of work that we always strive to do when looking at individual cases.
Yeah, we do many individual cases, but, you know, I mean, if we're seeing a trend, like you're saying, you mm-hmm. know, if we're seeing, as Corey has stated, you know, you see, if I see interview 10 people and they're coming in with the same issue, well, hey, there's a problem there, you know. Or if I see 3 people, I know there's a problem. So it just makes you think, and you have to really be watchful of those things, you know, what issues are emerging in the community and what changes, because then we have to change. We have priority setting meetings, and we include the community at large, and that's what we want to do. We want to know what are the changes.
Do you get any pushback from people like, they don't need attorneys, they need hard work, or we don't want people who are ethnic minorities in our communities? Do you get pushback from other people or other institutions?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's always the case when you're promoting change and you're affecting that change through the legal system. And we certainly try to be respectful of other people's opinions. However, everybody's entitled to know their legal rights when they are taken advantage of and not provided proper housing or not paid wages. It's certainly hard to argue that they shouldn't get those things when they've worked for them. So I think all in all, when we put in that context, people are a little bit more understanding and inclusive and supportive of the work that we do.
Yeah, it's wonderful work, and I'm so very proud to be here today. Any final words, ladies?
Well, I want to thank you for the opportunity that you've given us to talk about our agency, because we're so proud of it. We love working with this agency, and we love working with the population at large. I mean, you know, we have a broad, community that's economic, and you have to work with everybody. Sometimes you're just letting others know of the needs in the community of the people that aren't as fortunate, you know, to be able to provide everything they need to provide. So I think it's a discussion that needs to happen throughout the state. I mean, and I think we can start with the county and start talking about these issues and what is needed out there. I'm just grateful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Yeah, definitely. California Rural Legal Assistance has been a huge part of my life. My grandfather was a farm worker, and my aunt started working for CRLA 35 plus years ago. So it was always in my heart and blood to give back and go to law school and become an attorney. And I've been very fortunate to be with a wonderful organization that does great impact work, but still listens to the local communities, and the communities dictate what we do.
Understood.
CRLA doesn't dictate it.
That's a wonderful thing. This has been Brian Reynolds, volunteer with the San Luis Obispo County Library, for Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. Today we have been joined by Mary Jacka, community worker, and Corey Arellano, direct attorney for San Luis Obispo County of the California Rural Legal Assistance. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.